Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next couple of hours, 2 hours, we're going to be talking about cars, and you're certainly welcome to join us. The easy way to do that is just give us a call, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open right now. We have five lines. Gil will be answering the call. He's going to ask you what your name is, and he's going to ask you real briefly, what kind of car you got. But he's more than anything else, he's going to say to you, tell us what kind of car you have, and then let's talk about symptoms, and that's kind of a give-and-take thing. So we're going to have questions for you. Sitting to my right is Kevin Bright. He's from Automotive Dynamics, 99th Avenue in Grand, and you've been there for a couple of months?
13 years.
Okay, all right. But you've been in the Valley in a technician's position or in management position or service writer position for how long?
29 years.
Okay. And that's about what we've been here and I'm talking to my son, Alan. That's about what we've been in our building right now.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And then sitting across the studio from me is, what's your name?
Mark Salem.
Oh, boy, that's a bad thing to carry the rest of your life. Is it? What's it like having that name?
Sometimes good, sometimes bad.
Oh, that's all right. It'll be more good than bad. But people will ask you car questions once you get a little older. And
yes.
When that happens, then you're going to have to answer them.
Yes.
Yeah, you're going to have to. And it's just tell them the truth or you just kind of BS your way through it. Those are the two things you do. All righty? All righty. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by IMM Auto Service. They've been fixing cars and caring for their customers since 1972. You should choose IMM because they do good in every fashion. They prioritize your work. They offer you to the penny estimate. And that includes sales tax, environmental charges, shop supplies. They only do the authorized work, and they're going to guarantee that the work they do fixes the problem you have. But more important than that is they deal in Volvo, Saabs, Fiat, and Alfa Romeos. But no matter what you got in your garage, so you can have a Volvo, a Saab, a Fiat, or Alfa Romeo, but you can have a Chevy, a Ford, a Chrysler, a Honda, Toyota, and they do them all. Unlike most other shops, most of us don't like Volvo, Saabs, Fiat, and Alfa Romeo, but they do both of them really, really well. They're in the northeast quadrant of Tempe. They're just south of the 202, just west of the 101, and they've been around, like I said, since 1972. All right, I want to tell you both a funny story. Guy brings his Toyota truck in, and it's got a heck of a squeak. And it's a squeak he can't find, nobody can find, and it's just driving him crazy. So our tech takes it out for a ride, and he comes back and he goes, this is an obnoxious loud squeak, but I can't see it either. I can't picture it. I don't know where it's at. It's just kind of, I don't know if it's right, left, front, or back. So he takes another tech with him. And so that tech is kind of, then he stops and he says, well, I want to get in the bed of the truck. And so he gets in the bed, the other guy drives, and you're not going to believe what they found. First of all, they fixed it for free. They found an acorn stuck between the bed and the cab.
No kidding.
And they took a screwdriver and popped out the acorn, and it was gone. Now, what's the possibility of that? And everybody agrees that it was really loud and obnoxious. And obviously, as the bed and the cab twist and turn, then that's going to cause the problem. So, last week, did you have anything in your side of the business, Alan, that was a knock-your-socks-off kind of thing?
Excuse me. No, not really. No, we were busy, but... Yeah, we were busy.
Yeah. You weren't even at work last week. How about the week before? Anything?
No, nothing.
You see a lot of broken stuff, though, don't you?
Yeah, we see a lot of broken stuff. Not a lot of squeaks and rattles, stuff like that. More broken stuff, not running stuff.
Okay. Hey, Kevin, how about you? Do you guys do engines all the way down?
Absolutely. We do everything from oil changes to engines and everything in between.
Okay. And do you have a sweet spot as far as cars are concerned, or is there another list of cars that you thank them but tell them you're not the best shop?
To be honest with you, we are not afraid to take on really any make or model. We don't specialize in European vehicles. Where we're at in Sun City, we don't see a lot of Mercedes, BMW, Jaguar, Saab, things of that nature. We see more domestic cars, Buicks, Mercury, Grand Marquis, things of that nature are far more popular in Sun City. But again, we're not afraid to take on anything.
Okay.
And we give it our best on any make or model.
Motorhomes?
No, we have an RV dealership at 91st and Grand called Sun City RV, so we send the motorhomes over there. They have a service department that is much better equipped to accommodate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I'm, and then this is all owned by the Nide family.
It certainly is.
And Chuck is the dad, and Derek is the son.
Yes, sir.
And I'm pretty proud of that relationship because there appears to be some kind of a change where Chuck is kind of moving towards having Derek run it, very much like I'm doing that with Alan.
Sir.
And Derek's doing a lot better than Alan. And so I'm kidding you, of course, but it's not. You left and you had a Ford truck out there that was just giving everybody some fits. And do you know if they fixed it or found out the problem? Adam was working on it, and it was a classic hard crank, long crank, hot restart. You remember, or did Adam talk to you about that?
No, yet? I haven't heard that.
Now, it's very similar, I thought, to the diesel truck that we use for a shop where we had an intermittent, only hot, a long crank.
Okay. So I think I talked to the gentleman before I left, but yeah. No, I don't...
Jim is your first caller? Jim.
I'm sure I'll find out tomorrow. I haven't heard that.
No big deal. All righty. Hey, you guys ready? We're going to talk to Jim. Jim, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Mark, I had a question on picking a vehicle to tow a travel trailer. I'd like to be able to have a full-size RV. I'm looking at a Chevy Tahoe or a Ford Expedition. Now, the Tahoe is a 5.3-liter V8. Tahoe's kind of straightforward. The Expedition is that EcoBoost 3.5-liter twin turbo. What do you think of that as opposed to a V8 in towing?
Well, first of all, what's more important than anything else is what's the weight of the trailer you're going to pull?
Well, I haven't bought a trailer yet, but the Tahoe has a maximum tow of 8,600. The Expedition 9,200.
Okay,
so I have to stay, within that, under that.
Okay, you can't be over that. If you've got a towing of 8,000 and that's the limit and your trailer's at 9,000, you can't do that. Now, here's something else.
Yes.
If you're going off the sticker on the side of the trailer, that's gross weight. And so at that point, you can subtract about 800 to 1,000 worth of people and beer and bedding and all that other kind of stuff.
Right.
But still, you got to cap it. Alan, what do you think? I'll tell you what I think. But
I would buy the EcoBoost if it were me.
Okay.
Okay. I didn't know what, two turbos on a little V6, how it would.
No, they work really well. They had some problems early, but that's a really good engine. I think if I were to buy another gas engine in a pickup or something, that would probably be my choice. They do tow real good. I got a lot of customers that drive them and that tow probably more than they should be towing. And they make good power. They're very, reliable. I think if it were me, I would probably stick with that. Although my first choice, if I was going to stick with a half ton, I'd try to do like a Dodge EcoDiesel, the half ton pickup crew cab with an EcoDiesel.
The problem is the pickups will not fit in the garage, and SUV will.
Gotcha. Understand.
And they'll fit in the garage. You just put them in four-wheel drive and kind of bend that front wall out, and you won't have any problem. I'm gonna disagree with you. What kind of EGTs, exhaust gas temperature, is he likely to run hauling an 8,000 or 9,000-pound trailer to Flagstaff?
It's all limited in the.
But that's fine. Once we start limiting the EGTs, we're taking power away from that guy.
Yeah,
I don't like the options he gave us. The 5.3. How do you say it nicely?
Well, they had a lot of issues after 07 and the 5.3. 07 up to like 13.
Do they make the 6.0 in the Tahoe this time
6.2.
around? 6.2.
But it's the same thing. The 4.8, the 5.3, 6.2, they all have the same issues.
Cams? Are you talking about
cams? Yeah, cams, lifters.
But don't you think after 2007 that sooner or later they're going to figure this out?
It's still happening. Okay. I mean, 13. We've done them as late as 13.
Okay.
So
what's happening is the car comes in, it's got a clatter, and we look at it, and the camshaft has rubbed a lobe off of it. And so to replace the camshaft, you replace all the roller lifters, so the intake comes off, the whole front of the engine comes off, and the radiator, the condenser, the grill, because the camshaft has to come out the front. And by the time do you have to pull the heads or have...
Yes, I believe you have to pull the heads.
To get to the rockers.
Yes.
Okay, so you have to pull the heads, then you have to put all new roller rockers and a new camshaft. And have we done one over again, I guess is the...
No, not one over again.
Okay.
I typically try not to go back with a factory camshaft, if at all possible.
Okay. All right. So there you go. I like the Dodge idea. I like the because we both, first of all, let me just tell you up front, we both drive Dodges.
Yeah, and, I listen to the show as much as I can. I know you have a Dodge and like.
Well, mine isn't just because it's a Dodge. It's because it's a half-ton diesel. I mean, I think I would. Uh-huh. I mean, the Titan has the new Cummins. I mean, I would try to find something with the diesel if at all possible, uh-huh. and you could fit it in the garage. But of those two, of the two options you gave me, I would personally go towards the EcoBoost.
And it's a 5.3 issue. That's all it is. The 5.3 has got its own set of problems, well, but you like the twin turbo.
Yeah, it's not necessarily twin turbo. I mean, those 5.3s are dogs. I mean,
no, you're right.
I mean, I've had a couple of them, and I don't know. Well,
the 5.0 was a 3.02, so a 5.3 might be a 3.27.
3.27.
Yeah, 3.27. So in a V8 kind of vernacular,
Right.
a 3.50 is a 5.7.
Yeah.
So, and really and truly, I would go along with you on the twin turbo just because we're comparing it to the 5.3.
Right.
Because we see lots of 5.3s. We make a lot of money fixing the stupid 5.3s.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So, there you go, buddy.
Okay, one other question, if I can, real quick. Also on the Expedition, it has independent rear suspension. Anything, especially towing a trailer or a lot, maintenance-wise, because of the shafts on that, or isn't that anything to be concerned about?
Well, no.
I think he's going to have axle boots on that thing close to 75 to 100,000 miles.
I agree.
Okay. And we're going to have a nicer ride by far. And with the exception of the four boots, two on the left, two on the right, we have an inner and an outer. The outers are going to take the biggest beating. We do those 2 or 3 to 1 on the inners. How about you, Kevin?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that
okay.
as well.
So you're going to do the outside. If you just do the outside when they torn and start throwing grease, then you're going to do the outsides 2 or 3 to 1, every one inside. Now,
what kind of a cost associated with those?
Kevin?
You know, anymore, it's almost just as costly to replace the entire axle shaft than just a boot.
That's what we do.
Average, I'm going to say probably $300 to $400 per axle.
You bring up a great point. Both of you bring up a great point. Mm-hmm. We used to do boots one by one, but now the aftermarket reconditioned axles are just so much better and cheaper. The labor is a tremendous savings because all we're doing is pulling the axle. Well, it's not just as easy to pull the axle out. We're going to have to disassemble stuff to get the axle out, but we're just going to take the axle out, put a new axle in, and you start all over again.
Yeah.
And I agree with your $300 and $400 aside.
Right. Brand new axle. Both boots are new. And to be honest with you, most of our suppliers offer a lifetime warranty on those axles.
Okay.
So even if you're doing them again down the road, you might pay the labor over again, but the part, essentially.
But they're not going to do the boots, right? Just the axle.
The axle shaft itself.
Okay.
Well, you're right. If the boot tears down the road.
Yeah, they're going to do that.
That might be their story.
All right, we're going to take a break at 17 minutes after the hour. Thank you very much, Jim. And the lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. You've got three guys here that have worked on cars before. And then you got two guys that are going to work on cars before. Are going to work on cars, right, Mark?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Mark Salem here with Alan Salem. We got Rex Salem. We're going to talk to him. And Kevin Bright from Automotive Dynamics, 99th Avenue in Grand. And Kevin and I have a little gray hair between the two of us, so we've been around the block more than a couple of times. Let me introduce our new guest. And what's your name today?
Rex Salem.
Yeah. And what did you do this morning?
I went to my baseball practice.
And what position do you play?
I want to play catcher. I don't know what position I'm going to play yet, but I'm thinking I'm going to play catcher or first base.
And what school do you go to?
Tarwater Elementary.
Tarwater?
Yes.
Okay, you got a girlfriend yet?
Yes.
Okay.
Whoa! Wait a second.
Can you believe that he admitted that? How old are you?
Wait, I didn't know about this.
Yes, you did.
Whoa, we're going to have to talk off the air here.
What's your name?
Peyton.
Okay. Does she know you like her?
Yes.
Okay. And how old is she?
She's like 7 or 8.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, listen, I'm impressed that you even admitted that because
Serious.
I know your brother wouldn't admit that. Oh, boy. All right.
He doesn't even have a girlfriend, so. He's a big wimp. That's what he is.
How old are you?
8.
And how old is your brother?
He's 10.
Okay. All right, you better be able to whip him when you say stuff like that.
I will.
All righty. Hey, real quick, Kevin.
We were
talking about this 5.2 Tahoe versus the Expedition, and I didn't ask you, what do you think?
I'll be perfectly honest with you. For towing purposes, I think that Dodge has such a great proven track record that it can't be beat. And Alan brought up the half ton now that they offer, but the Cummins diesel that are in those Dodge pickups, they've just been around forever. And I'll be honest with you, I've got customers that have those particular powertrains that have 300,000. I've got a one in my lot right now that has 649,000 miles on it, and that belonged to our company, Sun City RV, and they use that truck for moving units around the lot. But if they did shows or different events and things of that nature, that truck just is a workhorse. I mean, it's you can't hardly kill it.
Yeah, you guys are right. The Cummins is the best of the three options. So the Tahoe, the Expedition, and the Cummins. But if he's going to do the Expedition, it holds a lot more people.
Sure.
The Expedition with the independent suspension, I think, is an improvement on the overall ride.
Sure. Now, he brought up needing an SUV because the truck wouldn't fit in the garage. That Cummins is not really going to be an option for him if that's mandatory,
right.
You know, the SUV part of it.
Well, he'll just have to talk to his wife and figure out how to build a new one in the backyard.
I would say build a bigger garage.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Or buy a house with a bigger garage.
Yep.
I don't think there's a problem. Dan, good morning to you. How can we help you this morning, Dan?
Yes, I'm looking for RV tires in the west side of town. I was just wondering where to go and what would you recommend?
Well, Kevin, here next to me from Autodynamics, you got RV tires.
Well, you know what? To be perfectly honest with you, we don't offer RV tires, but our neighbor next to Sun City RV, 91st and Grand, is S&S Tire.
Oh.
And, you know, I'll give them a little plug here because they're great guys. We've had a great relationship for many years. But when we have RVs even in our dealership, we do send them over to S&S, and they've done a great job, have for forever.
Let me tell you about S&S, Dan. You can walk in there and you can say, you know, this is the size tire I want. And they're going to have three different brands, three different levels, and they're going to give you good, better, best pricing. What you have to do is look at your RV, and it's going to say this in really small print. Maximum load single, maximum load double at this PSI. You need that information when you go talk to them. And that's going to tell them, I'll give you an example. If the coach, how many tires has a coach got on it? Six?
It's got six, yeah. Two in the front and four in the back.
Okay, so
one axle in the back.
Okay, so six tires. And if the thing weighs 30 pounds, then each tire has to have a 5,000-pound capability. Six times five is 30. You can't put a 4,500-pound tire, and you can't put a 4,000-pound tire underneath that motorhome. So that's the only information you need, or the gross vehicle weight, which is a sticker on your left knee when you're driving it. So the gross vehicle weight will work as well. But I agree with you. S&S Tire is the place to go.
Absolutely. They're very knowledgeable, and I'm certain they can fix you up.
All righty, Dan. Thank you very much. And Gil? Are you related to the Gil that runs this operation that's the pilot of this show?
That's why I called.
Oh, well, heck yes. We're at your service, buddy. Go ahead.
2000 Taurus. Yeah, it's got like 130,000 miles on it. It's like it.
Did we lose him?
I don't know. Sounds like it. Yeah. Maybe Gil's talking.
Still there.
Oh, okay. He's still there?
You know what, Gil? If you want, and you're on a cell phone, if you got a landline, call us back. We'll get you right on. But either we've lost you, or if you've lost service, or your wife's unplugged the doggone phone on you because she doesn't want you to tell us what the deal is, and we're going to side with her anyway. So that's the path.
All right, James is next.
All righty, Jim. Good morning to you. How can we help you?
Yeah, my future ex-son-in-law has a 2008 Ford Escape Hybrid. And the issue is that it won't start. So we took it into the dealership, Ford dealer, and the Ford dealer said that it's a high-voltage battery. They kept it for about 3 weeks. They tried to charge it, and basically they say that the high-voltage battery is just gone, shot. So I went out. I went on eBay, bought a used one, haven't put it in yet, hasn't arrived yet, but I'm just trying to figure out, you know, if he gets this thing, what should he do to set it up in such a way where it's not going to do that again.
Oh, that's not your problem.
I see a lot of other issues prior to that.
Oh, baby. I want to tell you, I would never buy a used hybrid battery off of the internet. Never.
Not only that, I don't know that I'd be installing one in your garage either.
That's the second part of it. Now, come on, guys. No, you're right. The second part is you don't have a clue, and it's very sophisticated to down that electrical system and then put that battery in there and then bring it back up.
That's correct.
Oh, I'm not going to install it. I just got it so that we could bring it to the dealer and they could deal with it from there.
Did you get their permission before you did that?
No.
Okay.
No.
I'm thinking you're going to run into problems because this is they likely are going to say. They're going to say, if this doesn't work, then the question now becomes, is the battery not working or is the installation not working? And most of us want to avoid that kind of disruption. So, but if you got one, I'm sure you can find somebody to put it in for you. But it's sophisticated, and it's kind of like bringing a computer out of the ground and putting a and getting it in service. So you have to really know what you're doing, and you have to follow the procedure exactly. And there could be as many as 15 or 20 steps through this process.
I'll tell you something the last question was, is how can you avoid this from happening again? I don't think you can.
Right,
being 9 years old, those batteries just wear out. And he said 2008.
2008.
9 years old. Yeah. We see them on Priuses earlier than that. I don't think that there's anything you could do. I don't think there's any.
But they do refurbish them. And those batteries have, I want you to picture this. This box is huge, like a Foot Locker. And inside is hundreds, if not thousands, of D-cell batteries. And they go through and they test, and the refurbished guys go through and they keep the new and or keep the good ones, clearly good ones, and they replace the bad ones. We've installed a couple of those from a company that we really like and we really trust. And even though we had a couple of bumps in the road on the front side, today it's seamless.
Right.
And so, the answer is if you've already got 9 years, then you've already hit a home run.
So then basically the car is just junk.
No. Everybody says that, but once you put a battery in it, I mean, have you priced a battery from another company installed?
Honestly, no.
Okay.
We basically looked at the dealer, and the dealer said, yeah, it's about $10,000, and that's about where his mouth dropped, and he said,
All right, Kevin, I'm going to ask you when we come back. Give me your range. Alan, if you know the range, but I know pretty much the same. 602-508-0960. We're seven seconds away from taking this break. 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. Let's turn off the speakers and we get and Kevin Bright from Automotive Dynamics, 99th Avenue and Grand, is sitting here next to me. He's been in this business for 29 years, right, Kev?
Yes, sir.
And my name is Mark Salem. And let me tell you about Larry Harker's Auto. He's been around a while, since 1967. He's at 38th Avenue and Indian School, and he's probably one of the best diagnosticians I've ever met in my life. His name is Bob. Ellen is his wife, and she handles the front counter and the phones. But he's the kind of guy that you can go in and wave the proverbial red flag in front of. You say, Bob, there's nobody in town that can fix this car. I don't know what to do. And he'll just smile at you and say, give me your keys. So he's really, really good. He's at 38th Avenue and Indian School. I'm pretty proud to have him on my best car repair shops list and to be able to recommend him to you. We're going to finish up with James on the no-start battery issue on his Escape. Historically speaking, and in general speaking, when you're bidding against a battery at a dealership, where does your price end up relating to them?
In most circumstances, it's probably 50 to 60% of the dealer's price.
Okay, so at a $1,000 battery, you're going to be at $500, $600?
In most cases, providing there is a good quality aftermarket battery available that would be applicable for that type of car.
Yeah. Now, who's the company that has a variety of parts that takes parts and makes them better, and part of their line is help?
Dorman. Dorman's the company that really kind of remakes most OE, whether it be a window regulator, switches, things of that nature. They specialize in remaking, manufactured original equipment type parts.
And in almost every case, they're making them better. So
yes.
You've got a Honda that's got the motor and the regulator as one. You can't buy them separate. So now you can. They'll sell you the regular, and they'll sell you new rivets, and they'll sell you all the package. So they're taking a lot of problem areas and making them better.
Yeah.
But we're doing a lot of batteries with them as well. And we can keep our prices down. So to answer your questions, James, I think you ought to call around. I think you ought to give them the information and ask them to bid a battery and tell them I want to write the check before I leave our house. But I don't think you should get rid of the car. I think if the car's gone 7 years on one battery, then I would think it would be fair to say that it's going to go another 5 or 7 based on if the same person's driving it.
Indeed.
Obviously, James, if you turn this over to a 16-year-old kid, it might be a different story. But anyway, Tony, good morning to you. How can I help you this morning?
Hey, Mark. Hey, I have a weird question here. I have a 92 F-250, and the check engine light comes on when I hit between 30 and 35 miles an hour, but I turn the truck off, engine light goes off, and it doesn't turn back on again until I hit 30, 35 miles an hour. Truck runs fine. It's got 170,000 miles on it, but before I take it in the shop, I thought I'd give you a holler.
All right, wait. Listen. I'm hitting it to you.
All right. So this is Kevin here. With that type of vehicle in that era, it's got the OBD1 type computerized engine controls. So it's a little more complex than the newer OBD2 to accurately trace down that particular problem. But nevertheless, it should set a trouble code that any shop should be able to retrieve and be able to take things from there. But it sounds like it might not just be speed related. It might be engine RPM related as well. And it could be really a variety of different things that would be related to, you know, engine RPM or speed in general.
Could also be the failure of a coil or a spark plug and picking up an engine misfire.
Oh, absolutely.
But here's the problem, Tony. You're asking a question that you don't want the shop following. You don't want them to try to figure out why. Because here's the reason. Once you find the problem and fix it, that will answer the question why the 30-mile-an-hour limit's there.
Absolutely.
So this is a question that you can answer after you fix the truck. But to chase this question is a bad idea for you.
Okay.
So you just go in and you say, I got a check engine light. There should be some historical information, right?
Yes.
So they're going to go in and look at the historical. But I want to remind you, Tony, the check engine light says this. Your problem is in Ohio. You have to find the city, the street, the address, the zip code, and that's the hard part. I'm going to remind everybody that 25% of the O2 codes we see necessitate some repair of an O2 sensor. 75% is a vacuum leak, a plugged fuel filter, an exhaust problem, all the other stuff. But only 25% necessitates an O2 sensor as far as our world is concerned. So I would just take it in, and I think the diagnostic, I'm in the 75 to 125 range for everybody in town. How did I do for you?
Yeah, we're pretty close to that. We're generally 115
okay.
for most diagnostic.
Okay, so you've kind of fixed yours. And frankly, I'm trying to cover everybody in town, so I'm going the 75-125 because that kind of covers everybody.
Sure.
But I'm with you. We're at 118 to 125. We're going to hit it somewhere along that line.
Yeah.
All righty, good luck to
Thank
you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And Bob, how can I help you today?
Hi, Mark. My son has a 2014 GMC pickup with a 5.3.
Okay.
And I just heard you saying is there any problems he should be aware of that he should be looking out for?
There's really nothing he can do. I mean, even if he went to church 3 days a week, if that camshaft fails, it fails. So it's really not anything he can do. But he can do this. To minimize the damage, if he gets any engine clatter or if he gets any a misfire, that's the time to take it in. Don't wait until we fill the engine with ground-up metal from the camshaft because that's not what's in his best interest. And usually when we start grinding the cam off, then we're going to get a little lifter clatter because we've created a space in between where there's not supposed to be space. So that's all he can
do. You know, they recommend 0W20. You know, he's using the Dextos.
Yeah.
You know, certified. I've read different things. I mean, some people say it's really for engine life, you're better to use a 5W30 than a 0W20, especially in Arizona.
No, I disagree. First of all, if you rub your hands together as fast as you can, put the palms of your hands together and rub them hard. Is there heat there?
Right.
Okay, do you want peanut butter to go in there and carry the heat away and provide the lubrication, or do you want water?
Right.
Okay.
But he's not starting the truck when it's 20 below zero.
Oh, you know what? That's a misnomer. Your 0-20 Dextos is a synthetic oil. It goes to 60 below zero. But your manual's not written for Arizona. Your manual's written for all 50 states. So everybody else is going to sell you on the idea that Arizona is different. But a 20 weight causes the engine oil to turn to a tar. It's called oxidation. At between 450 and 500. Kevin,
yes,
is that motor going to survive a 450 to 500 degree engine temperature?
No.
It ain't.
No, it's not designed for that. And it would...
At 240, 260 is normal operating temperature on the high side, but when we start at 300 to 350, the motor's toast.
Yeah.
So the two parameters are 60 below zero to 450 to 500. Well, those parameters mean nothing to us in this part of the country. But 0-20 is the best fuel economy, the best protection, the best wear agent, the least amount of a water contamination or sludge. So 530 is going to lose fuel economy. It's not going to offer you the cold weather protection, even in Arizona. So I am a fan of 0-20. Do you oftentimes move people out of there?
No.
Okay.
Not at all. We normally stick with the manufacturer's recommendations, especially on the 0-20, the full synthetic, because they've done their homework. They've done all the research necessary to verify that is what's best for that application and that particular powertrain or that particular engine for fuel economy, performance, and longevity. There's no doubt about it.
Well, and they're also warranting those for longer and longer and longer. So they want those motors to last, and they're going to... Now, the Dexo, Tony was right. It's a certification.
Right.
So Chevron has a Dexo certified engine oil, Valvoline, Quaker State, Pennzoil. All those guys have the same thing. What are you pouring over there?
Kendall.
Okay.
And they have the Dexo certification as well, but almost... Most oil manufacturers these days have exactly
have that.
Absolutely.
So when you hear that you have to use Dexos, it's just not true. No, when perhaps
when somebody tells you that.
That's right.
That's right.
Somebody perhaps in a dealership where I think it happens every once in a while, when you hear that you have to use a Dexos oil, RGM Dexos oil, that's not the truth.
No.
Because the certification allows Kendall to have it and Chevron and I Porsche.
Exactly.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 46 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and I need to catch up on a couple of my commercials. So let me tell you about Kurtz Automotive. He's at I-17 in Bell. You've probably heard of me talk about Kurtz. I know him personally. I know Jeff and Eric. They're both master technicians. Both of those guys are really, really, really good at what they do. And I think Jeff's in charge of the service writing, and then Eric's in charge of the shop. And these two young guys are just an unbeatable team of diagnosticians that really are afraid of nothing. So they do electrical work, brake service, auto emissions, vehicle maintenance, check engine lights. They do all that stuff, and they have the equipment necessary to do it. He's been around Kurtz since 1987, and he works on both gas and diesel. So Kurtz Automotive, I-17, and Bell. We're going to go back to Gil, because Gil came to us, and he has an 00 Taurus, but we had a phone connection problem. Gil, good morning.
Good morning.
Go right ahead, sir.
2000 Taurus, 130,000 miles, still looks and runs really good. Problem is, I can't figure out what the problem is. Say you're cruising along 60, 70 miles an hour on the freeway, coming up traffic, and you just put the brake on a little bit to slow it down. The front end just wobbles like it's going out of style. I've had just recently put new brakes on it, and the power steering pump was... leaking, so I had power steering pump replaced.
Okay, hold on, Gil. Hold on. Obviously, you still got it, so we don't really care what you've done because nothing has worked.
That's true.
I'm going to hit brakes right off the bat, and Kevin's shaking his head, but if you did brakes and it was done right, and if the brakes were the problem, that cured it. If it was involved in the brakes and somebody did brakes, it would have changed it for the better or worse. That still points at the brakes. What else could it be?
You know, it could be something in the front end, like an inner tie rod, outer tie rod, something that's loose that gives the tire a little bit of a wobble, sometimes even a hub bearing. But normally the symptoms are a little different. In most cases, it is brake-related, and it's normally warpage of your brake drums and or rotors. So the question is when they did the brake work, did they machine the drums or rotors? Did they replace them? You know, what are the specifications of that drum or rotor? Are they at the minimum, or do they have plenty of metal left, and are they warped?
There's a lot of times that when you pull the rotor off, there's corrosion and dirt behind the rotor to the face of the axle.
That's true, too.
So if you don't clean the back of the rotor up and you put it back on the way you found it, you haven't fixed the wobble in the rotor. And Gil, you said it only occurs when you hit the brakes.
Correct.
Okay. I agree with Kevin. It almost has to be a brake issue. And what I would do, and I think you would agree, is you take the front tires off of them, put a dial indicator on the two front rotors. It's a front-wheel drive.
Right.
Start it up, put it in drive, and just see how much wobble you got. And so if you got 30, 40,000's worth of wobble, then that's it. If you got 3 or 4,000's worth of wobble, that's not it. So it's just a little bit more work. Who did the brake work on it?
Was it Brakes RS or one of those places?
Okay. Well, here's the issue. Did they say that they're going to fix it?
I took it back to them, and they pulled everything off, and they said the brakes are in good shape.
Okay. Well, I would go back to them. I don't care who the shop is. If it was Kevin, I'd say the same thing. I would go back to them and say, look, it. I brought it in here, and you said you could fix it, and it's not fixed. So I'm going to take it someplace else. And if the repair is tie rod ends, a rack bushing, or something like that, then I'm not coming back to you because it's not your fault. But if somebody else fixes it and they do brake work, then I'm going to be coming back, and we're going to talk about it. That's a perfectly acceptable way, especially if the shop keeps saying it's not my fault. Well, if I determine it is your fault, I'm coming back and we'll talk money. If not, then I'm not coming back for that reason.
Or I can take them back and tell them to, you know, put it up on the rack and run it and see what happens.
No, because you got to drive that in order to get it to happen.
It.
Yeah, yeah. So you got to drive it, and the key here is it's only when braking. That's the key. So if you do 70 miles an hour, 80 miles an hour, 90 miles an hour, and you don't hit the brakes, there's no problem.
Correct.
So, but there's a slight problem with the tie rod ends. There's four of them, or the rack bushings. Kevin,
I would
get in that thing and drive, and I would stand outside the car, and I'd put my right hand on the steering, and I'd be looking at the left front tire, and I'd wiggle the steering back and forth gently, and I'd make sure that they were synchronized.
Sure.
Then I'd have you get and move the steering wheel, and I'd move to the passenger side. I'd touch the tire and watch your steering wheel with my eyes and watch for synchronization.
Oh, yeah.
And you've done that 100 times.
Sure.
And so if you look at that, and there's a delayed reaction on one side or the other, it still doesn't answer the question why it only occurs in braking, but it certainly could be part of the braking problem.
Sure, and a lot of times what we see also is it's sometimes related to the heat of the rotor or drum as well. Once it gets heated up, sometimes it distorts a little bit, so it changes the
it changes. It's the heat is going to change the shape of the rotor.
Exactly. Distortion is what I initially said. So a lot of times it can be, you know, after you've driven for a while. A lot of times we get customers that come in with that particular problem, but it's after doing a lot of driving on hills and declines and things of that nature, and a lot of braking while they're coming down hills. They get those brakes nice and hot, and those rotors get heated up, and then they change the shape. They almost distort in a roundabout way, and therefore it's almost like a warped record. So when the brake pad's applying against it, it's not a smooth, even surface. It's just a complete, you know, and you feel it.
Well, when it gets, you know, warmed up, it gets worse.
Okay, but it's there at cold all the way through a warm-up, yes?
A little bit cold, not a whole lot.
Okay.
You know, I'll start off and, you don't notice it, but, you know, it doesn't take long, maybe 5 minutes, and bang, it starts.
Okay. One of the things you need to do, though, is you need to determine what speed it starts at. And that will help them diagnose it. But I probably wouldn't take it back to the shop that shined you on the second time. I'd probably take it to somebody else. What part of town do you live in?
Scottsdale.
Okay. I would go up to Air Park Auto. I'd go to Bridwell at Scottsdale and Lincoln. Air Park Auto is up at Frank Lloyd Wright, just south and just right off the 101. So I'm pretty sure one of those guys can do it. All righty?
All right.
Thank you. And Alex, you're up next. Alex, how can I help you?
Thanks for taking the call, guys. I have a 2004 Chevy Silverado 2500 HD with 486,000 miles on it, and I've got a problem when I turn the truck on in the morning. The lights automatically go to high beam, and so I just hit the selector switch and they go off. And then every time I make a right turn, they go to high beam, and it's driving me crazy, and I can't figure out what it is.
I think it's the switch.
I have to agree. I'd have to believe that it's probably something in the turn signal / high beam or combination switch itself. Especially, do you say after you make a left turn?
After I make a left turn, it pops into high beam again too.
Okay. Well, that's a multifunction switch. You probably have cruise control on it. You got turn signals on it and all that kind of stuff. I've never seen one last 486,000 miles. That's a switch that we work it hard. Everybody works that switch hard.
Right.
So I would think if you could drive around and start wiggling it yourself and see if just the slightest amount of movement, which is unusual, the slight of amount of movement makes things change, then that's probably a good sign, a good diagnostic tool. Or if you hold it steady with your left hand as you drive around. What I don't understand is why is its default into high?
Yeah.
That's what bothered me. Oh, well, how about this? How about he's coming down the street and he turns a hard left into his driveway and he shuts it off? And if left causes it to go to high beam, then that would leave it in high beam.
Sure.
So I don't know if you're turning left or right into your garage or your girlfriend's house, but I think the multi-switch is probably the most common problem, and it matches all your symptoms.
I agree.
Well, it only goes to high beam on the left-hand side after I complete the turn and it hits the click-off or whatever the heck it is inside there.
Okay, so you're going straight down the road, and when yep. you turn left, it may go to high beam, but when it clicks off
no,
to high beam...
it never goes to high beam until after I make the turn, and then it flicks off. The selector switches off from a turn signal to nothing. Then
okay.
it goes to high beam.
It's still... We haven't changed our mind. Now, we're not suggesting okay. you go out there and just replace the multifunction switch. What we're suggesting is a senior guy is going to be able to go drive your car. He's going to know what it feels like. He's going to know how
yeah.
it's supposed to work. And I think that $35, $45, $55, $65 worth of diagnostic is going to virtually ensure that this is the multifunction switch.
Yeah, the commonality okay. would be just that it is part of the turn signal switch as well, or the multifunction switch. And so... they kind of go together. You've got that flipper that's part of that switch that would, you know, kick on the high beams. But it's all,
right.
you know, in the same generality, it's all part of that same switch. So that would be a common.
All your symptoms are common to that switch. All
okay.
your symptoms. All righty. All right.
Exactly.
Good luck to you, Alex. Thank you very much. That's a question I've never had before.
No, me either.
Never. Yeah. 1988 never happened. Jim, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Got a 2010 Dodge Ram. I had a EAS and a DRC light that wouldn't go away when I started the truck and just stayed on.
Okay.
So I looked it up and they said it was brake light switch. Put a new brake light switch in and that solved all my light problems, you know, with them going off. Solved all that. But now I have a noise in my stupid radio, but it's only on one frequency. And it's, if I touch the brake pedal, that noise goes away.
Wow. That's the second question I've never had since 1988. I think what you do is you make sure that the rear taillight bulbs are exactly the ones you're supposed to have. And number two, I'd switch them from side to side and see if that changes anything. I'd put a little dielectric grease around the base, the brass base of the light. You can buy a little bitty tube for less than a dollar. And I'd also make sure that
1 minute
your left turn and right turn and your brake lights are working. So have somebody exercise all of that and you stand behind it, because that noise could be coming from the multifunction switch, but it also could be coming from some kind of an electrical interference of a bad connection. And really, I wouldn't have changed the brake light. I would have gone back and looked at the grounds and looked at the taillight bulbs before I changed the brake light switch. How about you?
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. It sounds like it's a frequency coming through, maybe a bad ground or, you know, electrical.
Yeah, it's not like we haven't seen that before. Bad grounds are a real common problem, and we haven't seen those before until the last probably 10 years. So, Jim, I don't really know, but the interference, maybe take one bulb out at a time and see if the interference goes away with that bulb. And that would help you determine that it's a socket problem or something like that. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, so you can call in. We'll be back in about 6 minutes, 602-508-0960.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and Kevin Bright from Automotive Dynamics. He's at 99th Avenue in Grand. He's sitting here with me. And I want to tell you, we had a good time, and we've got another hour to go, so just stick right there. But I got to tell you about Automatic Transmission Exchange. Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange has been in the same location since 1968. He's at 40th Street in Washington. He does everything from oil leaks on your transmission to working on the electronics. And he rebuilds. He tells me, I don't rebuild even 50% of the cars that come in here. They're able to be fixed without a rebuild. And in reality, our industry in general is rebuilding a significant amount of transmissions for probably items that don't need a rebuild. So people can make up their own decisions. But Phil's a good guy. He's been around for a very long time. So if you've ever gone up and down Washington, like you're going to downtown or you go to work, then you'd look to your right on the north side of the road, and you'll be able to see Automatic Transmission Exchange. We call it ATE. Elena, you're up first. How can we help you today?
Hi, Mark. How are you today?
I'm very good. Thank you for asking.
Oh, great. Glad to hear it. My daughter has a 2013 Toyota Prius, and it has a very odd chemical odor coming from the car. And it's we've had the carpets cleaned. We've had all of the upholstery cleaned. We've had the interior air filter taken out and replaced, and then there was another filter somewhere in the engine compartment that they took out and replaced as well. And they've cleaned out the air conditioning.
Okay, hold on. Tell us what the smell smells like. Is it rotten eggs? Is it a sweet smell? Is it a sour smell? Is it a smoke smell?
No, it is more of a, almost like an electrical chemical type of an odor. Almost, gosh, I don't know, maybe a rubbery type of a smell. Not like a tire rubber, but more of a petroleum.
Okay.
Chemical smell is the best I can come up with.
All right. I'm wondering if the battery isn't a part of this whole thing. The battery's in a compartment that's kind of difficult to get to. And I'm just wondering if there's a bad connection creating a hot spot that's burning some of the insulation off the cables. I'm wondering if it's overcharging and the smell is coming from the sulfur that's overcharging. Have you had any, you know, we both work on Priuses, but I don't know that this is something I've run across before.
Not something I've really seen, but from the symptom, it really sounds like that's definitely a good possibility. Some of the other crazy things that we've run into is, for instance, you run over a plastic bag in the middle of the road, and it gets onto the exhaust, whether it be the catalytic converter or any part of the exhaust system, and it's burnt on there. Even if it's just a small portion of that plastic bag, it just emits that odor while it's burning off your exhaust system. But I would have to agree with Mark. It sounds like it possibly is maybe battery related or something in the electrical system.
And another thing, Elena, is you know, when you take it in for an oil change, you can ask them. There's a picture on the Internet that's gone around where someone ran over a mattress and their drive shaft had all the metal wrapped around it. And they took it into the shop and said they had an abnormal noise. And this was an unbelievable amount of the mattress that was wrapped around the drive shaft. Now, your Prius is a front-wheel drive, so that's not going to happen. But I think an inspection of underneath the car might be beneficial. So get it up in the air, and let's see what we find and smell.
That's a good idea. We've taken it in twice now to the dealer, and they've gone through it and looked at it. But I don't think they've ever looked at the battery. That's a good place to start. I'll try that.
I would just say to them, you don't want to say the guy on the radio said this. You say, you know, I was just looking on the Internet, and there was a couple people that said that they had an odor associated with the battery. And then I would also like for you to inspect the underside. So is it possible for you to get it up in the air and just kind of walk from front bumper to back bumper and look for maybe maybe the tire's rubbing on the inside of some frame member because the upper or lower control arm bushings are gone, and so that tire is creating the smell. And so it could be a whole lot of things, but I think getting it up in the air is in your best interest, okay?
Okay. Oh, I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Elena. Dave, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Top of the morning to you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
My wife announced yesterday to me she's thinking about buying a Mini Cooper. I have had zero experience with these cars whatsoever, never have looked at them in my life. And I was just curious, since I value your gentleman's opinion highly, that what your opinions of those vehicles are.
Well, first of all, the default here is to side with your wife, because we always side with wives because we're scared of them. We're a lot more scared of them than we're scared of the husbands. But I have two comments, and then Kevin, you chime in. Well, you go first. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I got to agree with the happy wife, happy life scenario. You got to side with her. But I don't know if anything in particular that I could fault the Mini Cooper for. I mean, it's, you know, part of the European car family, so you know, of course, it costs a little more money to maintain and to repair when it comes down to it. But I can't tell you of anything that I would say is a red flag on the car in general.
And I agree with that. I don't think that they're maintenance monsters. But there's also a supercharged Mini Cooper. So it says Cooper with an S on the back of it, which is a real hot rod. The thing I don't like about the Mini Cooper is how small it is. And if you go head-on with a Suburban, you aren't gonna come out a winner.
True.
And I think under the circumstances with all these one-way drivers and all these head-on collisions on I-17 and all that kind of stuff, I don't think that I want a small car wrapped around my kids, my mother, my father, relatives, if I have the chance to chime in. I just think they're better served by wrapping them with a little bit more metal. I mean, we're seeing some of those little bitty cars out there. I think the Chevrolet Volt. Mm-hmm. They look like a skateboard with a motor in it and a couple of seats.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just thinking to myself, and let me tell you from my background point of view, I'm involved on behalf of insurance companies and lots of other legal entities on accidents. And so they say, hey, they said the throttle stick got stuck. Go look at it. Can you tell? They said the brakes are bad. Go look at it. Can you tell? So I get to see a lot of these cars. And the smaller ones typically lose the battle in a big way when they're up against something much bigger. And it's just a matter of physics. So, you know, if you got a 6,000-pound Suburban hitting a 3,100-pound Cooper, that Suburban's just going to run over the top of it. So I think my issue would be safety. But certainly, I'm not going to overrule your wife. If your wife is young and wants a hot rod, I'd have her get a Cooper S because that's a little hot rod. But that also creates a situation where she drives faster, and faster in my world is more dangerous. So the bottom line is Dave, was we're not going to side with you. Well, let me ask you a question. Does your wife shoot guns in competition?
No, it's funny. You asked. I used to be a weapons instructor in the Marine Corps decades ago, and she happens to be listening. I told her, I said, I'm not going to say a word. I'm just going to mention what her concerns were and so on, and let her listen to you guys. So I am completely out of this. I'm not saying a word, but I'm. Her head is, and her eyes are rolling in the back of her head to a certain extent right now, and because I have a deep gut feeling that she's going to say, I knew that's what you were going to say as well, but as long as it didn't come from me, it's perfectly fine.
All right. So I want to talk directly to your wife, okay?
Well, she won't come to the phone.
No, that's okay. She doesn't have to. what's your name? What's your name so I can address her properly?
Diane.
Diane, let me tell you something. The guy next to me is Kevin Bright, B-R-I-E-T, at Automotive Dynamics at 99th Avenue and Grand. If you have a problem, you go see him.
Thanks a lot.
You didn't know where I was going with that, did
you?
No,
I didn't.
That's called feeding your guests to the wolves. You know, Diane, I wouldn't buy the very first car I look at. You can really make an intelligent decision after you buy three or four cars. And sure, I mean, there's some small BMWs, and I think the Mini Cooper comes from the BMW line. But
it does.
There's a lot of smaller BMWs that are four doors and two doors that, you know, are better, that might be a little taller, a little better. And I'll tell you something else, too. We've worked on a couple of Mini Coopers, and getting in and out of those when you're north of 55 is like getting in and out of a bathtub. I mean, so it's not easy to get in and out. It's a matter of throwing one leg in and then crawling into the car and then putting your butt on the seat and then bringing your other leg in. So, I mean, I'm pretty good health, but that's still, after getting in and out four or five times while I'm working on it, it takes a little time. So, all righty, Diane and Dave, you're on your own. Diane, we're voting for you. Make sure that Dave fully understands that. So, Philip, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Yes, good morning, Mark. Nice speaking with you.
Thank you.
I have a question. I have a CLS 500 2006, and I was downtown Phoenix on the rally, and all of a sudden my brakes went out. It says, warning, danger, brake failure, depress the pedal, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I pulled over, and I turned the engine off and turned it back on, and it reset itself, so... The next day, I took it over to Thunderbird Auto over there on Nareen.
Yes.
Brandon over there. And they run a test on it, and they couldn't find anything. But they did say they found a recall notice back in 2005. So what I did, I called the dealer and talked to the rep, and he said, I need to search it out. And said, there was no recall on there. There was maybe a warranty, but the warranty is over. Then I called Mercedes-Benz 800 number, gave them the VIN number and everything, and just, no, there was never a recall on it. So,
okay. I think we might have a problem with the words. There's a big difference between a recall and a technical service bulletin. A recall is bring your car in, everybody under these parameters, bring your car in, and we want to check or repair or verify this system's working. But a technical service bulletin is just the opposite. Instead of a recall that we're going to go into a specific symptom and make a repair to ensure its performance, a recall or a technical service bulletin says, if when you honk the horn, jackrabbits jump out of your exhaust pipe, then this is what we want you to do. So it's very specific in nature. Let me ask you a question. Was the light on your dash red or yellow?
Red.
Okay, red means stop. There's no question about that. I think I would take it in and make sure that they documented that you completely lost brakes and that you had a red warning light come on. And I think that puts a little pressure on them to just do a little harder work. And then when they call you and ask you about the repair, I think it would be appropriate for you to say, are we guessing or are we fixing? Because if we're guessing, I want to know whose money we're guessing with. But if we're fixing, I'm perfectly happy to give you the okay to fix it. But I want you to know that I don't want this to happen again, because that was a feeling of total helplessness. I want to tell you, have you ever had a complete brake failure?
No, not without an actual mechanical issue, like a brake master cylinder that hydraulically bypassed and, you know, the pedal went to the floor. You got a brake booster that, the diaphragm went bad on. You've got a hard brake pedal where you got to put your body weight on. But a complete brake failure of that nature, not something that would correct itself by cycling the key. Now, that to me is something that, reset. You know, something electronic. And obviously that car is equipped with a very complex brake system that I know typically even when you do average brake work, calipers or brake pads and things of that nature, it has to be reprogrammed, you know, with proper diagnostic equipment, et cetera. So to me it sounds like it's something that may be electronic related to that brake system that was reset by cycling the key. But the direction I would go with that is to check the onboard computer to see if it's seen anything in any of the categories that would relate to that brake failure.
All right, now on ABS, we know for sure that when we lock up a wheel, the ABS module will drain the fluid and pressure from that wheel to continue to spin.
Sure.
I just wonder what would happen if somehow or another that ABS module opened up all four valves, thinking he was into a four-wheel slide. And so all of a sudden it locks up or opens all the valves, which drains the pressure to all four tires. Now, here's the problem with that. We don't know if he lost two tires or four tires.
Right.
We don't know that. We know we got a red brake light, though, and red means stop right now.
Sure.
I don't know how that would be. How many miles were on that car?
About 140.
Okay.
About 140.
So I think what I would do, and it takes a scanner to do this, I would do a brake fluid flush, and I would just do it because I think it's going to make it better, worse, or the same. Now, if it makes it better, it's going to fix it. If it makes it work, we're on the right track. And if it's, so better, worse, or the same, you got two of the three are good. So that's what I would do. I also want to tell you this. I want you to be prepared in case this happens again. So I want you to drive as if you got a hot cup of coffee with no lid between your legs. Okay? I want to make sure you understand the severity of this. So be real careful. Stay in your own lane. Practice. And if something happens and you hit the brakes, then you're going to have to turn right or left and jump the curb and go into somebody's front yard in a residential area or something. But and make sure you're wearing your seatbelts until you get this taken care of. Okay?
Oh, definitely. My wife is afraid to even drive the car. And one more question is, I think about a month ago you spoke to a gentleman who had a Mercedes and a 320 or something, and you asked him, or he asked if you could put regular in it. I wonder, in the CLS 500, can you use regular on there?
Well, the conversation was what you said, but here's the thing. If you use regular and there's a noticeable difference in pre-ignition or pinging, or if there's a noticeable difference in how the car drives, the answer is no. But you bring up a good point. Have you got a pencil handy?
Yes, I do.
I want you to call Goody, G-O-O-D-Y. He has one of the best Mercedes-Benz only repair shops I've ever met in all my life. This guy is a wizard, and I want you to talk to him. Now, he's not taking a lot of new customers. He's got more Mercedeses than he knows what to do with. But you're going to tell him that you have a nasty picture of Mark Salem, and you'd like to sell it to him, and that'll get you in.
Okay.
All right? And it's not true. You don't have that, but I'm just saying. But Goody's a great guy, and if there's anybody that has seen this before or knows how to fix this or knows where to look, it's going to be Goody. And okay. It's Goody's repair shop, and he's in the northeast portion of Scottsdale. All righty, Philip, thank you very much. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, and we're running real late on a break. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Mark Salem and Kevin Bright from Automotive Dynamics, 99th and Grand. We're here at your service, but I got to take care of some business real quick here. Air Park Auto Service has been open since 1985. They're in the northeast Scottsdale area. They're just south of Frank Lloyd Wright, and they're just east of Hayden on Raintree. Nadine is a female, and she owns and operates Air Park Auto. So those of you, the ladies that want to deal with a lady-owned business, and perhaps one that's been open longer than 6 months, then Air Park Auto is certainly a good place to go. They actually take care of everything north of Lincoln all the way to Carefree and from 56th Street all the way to Fountain Hills because they're the only shop in that area that I'm willing to stand up and say it's a good shop. So Air Park Auto, it's on Raintree just east of Hayden, a great place to go. We're going to do the ladies first. Jean, you're up. How can we help you?
Good morning. First of all, I'd like to say I love your comment about north of 55 when describing your age, and I'm going to use that next time I fill out any type of application.
You know, I want to tell you something. I copied that from somebody else, and I thought the same thing you did. I don't have to tell them I'm 62. I just say I'm north of 55.
That's great. I'm definitely doing it next time.
All right.
Anyway, I've had a problem. I have a 2007 Toyota Camry LE. And I've had a bad problem with the air conditioning system for probably 2 years now. First I have this problem where it's always blowing low speed, and then if I hit a bump in the road, it goes to high for like maybe a minute, and then it goes back down to low. But that's okay since I still have air. Then I've had problems with where it was blowing really warm air, so they put some Freon in it a couple of times, and after several months, then the problem would come back.
Okay.
Now, recently, they just put some more Freon in it, and they didn't find the leak yet. That's going to be my next step. But right now it's blowing cold air, but last night it was going from, remember what I said when I would go for the low speed, and then it would hit a bump and it would go to high speed.
Yeah.
Now I turned my car on. There was nothing at all, and I thought, finally, everything's gone. And then after driving it, and I went to turn around a corner, and all of a sudden it came back on, so I thought, oh, no, now it's going to go from low speed to nothing.
Okay.
That's the new pattern.
Okay. Kevin.
Yes, sir.
She hits a bump, and let's follow the power lead. We got power going to the blower switch.
Mm-hmm.
1, 2, and 3 have a circuit all of their own, and 4, high, has a circuit all of its own.
Right.
So, and then we've got the blower motor, which is underneath the dash on the passenger side. So she can, if her blower motor is drawing excessive amps, it's going to take a toll on that switch.
Absolutely.
And her blower motor could have a brush problem where the knock in the road makes the blower motor either work or not.
It certainly could.
And then when, so here's the question to you, Gene. I need to know if when you drive around in high fan speed, if all your problems go away, that tells everybody what's going on. Because, again, the fan speeds 1, 2, and 3 goes through a resistor and then goes to the blower motor. But fan 4, even if you get too cold, roll the window down. I need you to drive around with 4. High speed.
No, I can't. I can never get it to start on. The only time it turns on high is if I hit a bump, and then it only lasts about a minute.
Okay. Well,
so I never really have high, ever.
Okay. Well, then that helps us a lot because, like I said, 1, 2, and 3 have a, that train goes this way, and 4, that train goes another way. Now, I would go in and look at the amp draw on the blower motor to see what it's like,
sure.
And that would be the first thing I would do the test on, and obviously if it's 20 or 30 amps, it's going to overcome that circuit. If the blower motor's drawing heavy amps and lots of electricity, that switch is bad too.
Right.
So we're going to have to do both of them. I'm going to tell you something on this Freon issue. I mean, you've taken it to the same shop for all the blower issues and this Freon issue. I want to suggest to you that you might want a fresh pair of eyes. I would be very disenchanted with my staff if you were my customer.
I actually went to two different places, to be honest. And the last time I had a problem where if I stopped at a light, it would blow really warm air. And so I kept trying to drive fast so I'd get it cooler. And then we found out that there was the motor, the blower that the Freon, that cools the Freon down, that needed replacing.
Okay.
So I replaced that.
All right,
but I just don't know how much money to put into this. I don't know if these switches would be real expensive or just sell the car or what.
No one can tell you. No one can tell you. But I can tell you this. If you trade it in, that's a $4,000 hit for sales tax and license, and I can do a whole lot of work on that car for $4,000.
Sure.
So I can't help you decide whether you're going to sell it or not, but I can tell you that there's two fans, one on the radiator and one on the evaporator, which is in front of the passenger behind the dash. We're talking about two different fans here. But what comes out of the vents is the fan and the blower motor behind the glove box. But the fan up on the radiator, if it fails, then we're going to shut the air off and you're going to get warm air.
Right.
So the high pressure switch kicks off the air conditioning. So you got so many moving parts here. I want you to go to a shop that is not brake or a transmission shop or some kind of a chain that sells tires, because those guys are not qualified to work on
one
this.
Minute.
So you have to go to somebody who's well-versed, is ASE certified, and I don't know if you've seen these commercials, but, you know, here's a transmission shop, and now all of a sudden we're doing everything. And, of course, their guys are used to doing really good work in transmissions. Now, all of a sudden, you give them air conditioning problems, ABS problems, and you give them O2 sensor problems, and they don't know where to go.
Right.
So, anyway, Joan, good luck to – or Gene, good luck to you. If you want to email me and I'll suggest a shop for you, then you can. Mark@MarkSalem.com. Mark@MarkSalem.com. John and Linda, you stay right there because you guys are my next two callers. We're going to take a break for about 3 minutes or so, and we'll be back. Anybody else? 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. There's three lines open. You can grab one right now. I'm Mark Salem. This is Kevin Bright. We'll be back in a few minutes talking about cars. Kevin's from Auto Dynamics at 99th Avenue and Grand. And we're happy that you're participating in our car show. We'll be right back.
Hi.
Hi.
We have two older cars and a leased car. And we have the leased car that's another year on it. And then we have these two older cars, one we inherited and one I bought. And I have a Toyota, 2004 Toyota, that only has 60,000 miles on it. And then we have a Lexus that's a 2001 that has 220,000 miles on it. And we're wondering if it's a good idea to keep either one of those, and once the lease is up, or keep both of them, being as they're so old, or whether it's time to trade things in. And my husband has concerns about the Toyota, that even though it has very low miles, that it's an old car. It's a 2004, and it really was ridden by the little lady from Pasadena, his mother.
Okay.
And she had it always serviced at the Toyota dealership, and it drives well, but, again, he's worried about, hey, it's going to get old. Seals are going to break. Things are going to happen.
Okay. And the answer to your question is how it's been serviced, and if you've hit all the owner's manuals intervals, and if it's been well, if both of them have been well serviced, and the Lexus is not leaking oil or using oil, which means the motor
is using oil like a big dog.
Okay, then the Lexus goes away, and the Toyota. How many miles were on the Toyota?
60.
Okay, that's a keeper as far as I'm concerned.
You know, I'd have to agree. You said it was a 2004, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so what you got to take into consideration is 13 years old and low miles. The only real, I guess, gray area in that is sometimes what happens with a car that has very few miles, that has, you know, 10 years or older, is that it, from the lack of use, a lot of things will dry out, seals and gaskets, you know.
Right.
Rubber stuff,
obviously, yeah. So what you have to be prepared for, and keep in mind, it sounds like this is the car you inherited, so you don't really have an investment into the car at this point, is that you have to be prepared for if and when those circumstances arise, because something is aged and is dried out from the low miles or lack of use, that it's going to cost you a little bit to take care of and get that car back up to snuff. The mileage is great. Obviously, you know from your Lexus and the miles you put on that Toyota engines and powertrains are generally good for lots and lots of miles. But again, the one concern is the age, and you know, the possibility of things that are dried out from the lack of constant contact with lubricants and fluids and things of that nature, because we're in a dry, hot climate that just simply happens here in Arizona.
But I'm going to take the other side of that in this respect. Let me ask you, Linda, if I take over all your maintenance, what's your lease on your car? How much is that a month?
$250, I think.
Okay, I'll take it. I'll take all the maintenance on the Toyota for $250 a month. Otherwise, you're not going to pay a dime for maintenance or any repairs.
I don't understand.
Okay, what I'm saying to you is the Toyota is going to cost you less than $200 a month to drive. I don't care how much work you have to put into it. If you put $200 a month to driving it, that's $2,400 a year. They're not going to put $2,400 a year if they have to replace all the hoses and the belts.
Right.
It's not going to happen.
Right.
So I'm trying to tell you that the Toyota is going to cost you $200 a month or less to drive.
Okay.
Compared to your other leased vehicle. The Lexus, because it's using oil, it needs to go bye-bye. So then you can decide whether you're going to keep the leased one or not. But you also should explore what the buyout is on the lease and what the cost is on the lease, because you don't want to keep that if it's going to be huge numbers. Take your loss now and get the heck out of there. But I'm not a fan of leased cars, but the Toyota, the Camry is a keeper. The Lexus needs to go. Okay?
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You betcha. John, you're up next. How can we help you?
Well, actually, I'm calling about a previous caller who had a Prius with an odor problem.
Uh-huh.
Several weeks ago, I went to a class with DPS and Glendale Fire with regard to accident scene work. I'm a flatbed driver.
Okay.
At any rate, one of the anecdotes that they told was that a woman had a Prius that she went back into the car to pull paperwork out, and she was in the car for not a very long time. But something had released fumes into the car. She ended up with permanent brain damage. And I don't have any specifics on the case of where it happened, what the product was that got to her facility, you know, her mental facilities. But regardless, when the woman was talking about having an odd odor that she couldn't identify in her car, and it turned out to be a Prius, it set off all the alarm bells in my head, like, oh, my God.
You know, we should have sat a little harder on that. We should have, and thank you for bringing that up. But I did ask her about a sulfur smell because I was concerned about that battery boiling. And the sulfur is going to burn your eyes, and it's a very rotten egg smell, so you can't miss it. But
the 12-volt battery in the Prius is back in by the right taillight.
You're talking about the battery that's 2 foot by 3 foot, right?
No, the 12-volt that operates all the lights. And
the start battery.
Okay.
Yeah, the controls and stuff. Okay. But the big power traction battery, I think is what they call it, is like behind the seat.
Yeah.
Something
Two minutes.
And I don't know what the product is in there. I think it's a giant gel cell, but I'm not, you know, I'm not sure what the chemical makeup of it is.
Yeah, I've never taken one apart because if they say it's a bunch of D cell batteries, then there's nothing wet in there. We've got carbon batteries in there, so we can have carbon batteries, we can have wet acid batteries, and then we can have the gel batteries. And so I don't know the answer to that, but your message is well taken. She needs to have it addressed because of the possibility we don't know what it is that could be harmful.
Sure.
So once we know what it is, then we'll know if it's harmful or not. But you bring up a good point, and I appreciate that. Thank you very much. All righty, let me tell you about S&S Tire. We talked about S&S Tire just a few minutes ago. It's right around the corner from you. And they have three locations, and S&S Tire, hold on a minute because I need to look at the paperwork. They've got, you know what I mean? I'm looking at the wrong paper. Peoria, Sunrise, and Surprise, and Goodyear.
1 minute.
And so that's right next to you. Do you guys buy tires from there or sell in addition to them?
We sell in addition to them. Obviously, we do tires. So, they sell Michelin tires, which are great tires. So quite often when we're in the need of a Michelin-branded tire, we'll definitely go to S&S.
Okay. Well, they do front-end alignments. They do suspension work. But what I like about them is you can go in and say, I want a good, better, best, and they can give you all that in one size. So they have a huge warehouse. So if you have a specific tire, they can give you the Michelin if you think that's the top end. Then they can give you a middle one. Then they can give you a price for a really cheapy tire. So maybe you're turning your car in for a lease, and you just need some tires to put on it. So they have that ability. Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. Great places, all of them. And S&S Tire is a very happy person, and we're happy to have them on our list of best car repair. When we come back, we're going to talk about a service repair estimate and what to look for. And I also want to tell you a funny story that happened in my shop last week. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Kevin Bright from Automotive Dynamics, 99th Avenue and Grand, is sitting here next to me. Been around the block a couple of times and worked for 29 years in the auto repair business, both as a technician and a service writer and now a manager.
Service manager, yes.
All righty. So, beep, 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 beep. Important news. Philip, I hope you're still listening to the radio. Philip had that Mercedes-Benz with the red brake light.
Right.
So I told him to go talk to Goody, okay? So this is a message from Goody. Now, very few people have my cell phone number, but Goody is just a great guy. Thanks for the referral. I'm pretty sure his classic CLS 500, that guy, will need a Sensortronic brake control pump. The car is brake by wire. It runs about $1,800, and Mercedes did extend the warranty to 10 years. And yes, he can run regular fuel with absolutely no problems.
Good advice.
So, and you know what? 99% of the time, he's right. When it comes to Mercedes, he's right. He doesn't work on Chevys or Dodges or any of those cars. That's all he works on. So, Philip, if you're there, Goody in Scottsdale, Goody's Mercedes-Benz, G-O-O-D-Y-S, Goody's Mercedes-Benz. And I tell people you don't have to go to the dealers because this guy is just awesome. And if I owned a Mercedes and I was in Sun Lakes, I would go to see him if he would take me. But he's kind of busy. That's what we were talking about. All right, I want to tell you something else. I want you to look at this right here with me. Brian, just hang on a minute. All right, I want you to look at this sheet. This is from a dealer.
All right.
This diagnostic sheet says AC diag, and it shows 1.2 hours. And what's that number?
124.50.
Okay. So you'd really have to divide 124.50 by 1.2 to figure out his labor rate.
Right.
Read this right here.
Modify cowl panel per Ford.
And it's 1 hour.
All right, 124.50.
So 124.50 for an hour and 124.50 for 1.2 hours. That's kind of strange.
It really is. It looks like they may have done some sort of adjustment or modified their 1.2, maybe to match an estimate. Hard to say.
Well, and how many shops do you know that have two different labor rates?
Very few.
I don't know anybody.
Right.
I mean, I just don't know anybody. So the question is what is their labor rate? None of this makes sense.
Right.
So this is a $920 estimate, $925 estimate, and it has to do with evacuate and recharge the AC, do a diag, replace the accumulator, modify cowl panel per Ford, and to improve water drainage. So this whole thing was done for just slightly over half price. The entire thing was done. AC diag, evaporate and recharge AC system, replace blower motor resistor. That's a $49 part.
Right.
Modify cowl panel per Ford. Do you have the technical service bulletins to read and do that?
We have the service bulletins available, sure. So, I mean,
they're the same.
Absolutely.
And no matter you got Mitchell or Aldata or whatever,
right,
you can go in there, print the service bulletin out, and it's from Ford with a different name on it, and it says this is what you do and this is the parts you order.
Sure. It's so, a word-by-word instruction on how to perform that particular...
Absolutely. That function.
That function,
so,
exactly.
It's going to be the technical service bulletin typically is not free at the dealer. It's a symptom-driven thing, and you pay for it.
Right.
All righty. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto Repairs, I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom is the owner, and I think I've known him since probably the late 90s, early 80s. And he's been in business in the Deer Valley area, in the North Phoenix area, since 1983. His staff is very good, and so is Tom. Tom's a fisherman, so if you want to go there and talk fishing, he'd be there all day long. Your oil change will take you 10 hours by the time you guys leave the lobby together. His technicians are ASE Master Certified, and they get the job done right. So if you want to work on or do business with one of the very best shops anywhere near the area of I-17 in Deer Valley, then Action Auto Repair would be a good place. He's on the northwest corner. And here's what you do on any new shop. You go in for an oil change and see how they treat you. And that'll tell you all you need to do, all you need to know. All righty, let me tell you a story.
Yes, sir.
All of my children, including Alan, 38, and Allison and Andy, 33, they've all grown up in the car repair environment. So from the time they were born, they were in a bassinet in the office. So my daughter, Andy, has a little girl named Josie. She's two. And she has been in my wife's office and in Andy's office. And I want you to picture that there's a keyboard and there's a telephone.
Right.
So she sits there and they put her in kind of a WordPerfect or a Word environment. And she, as she types, these gibberish comes on the screen. So the other day, my wife Renee walked out of her office, and Josie was sitting in her chair and in front of the computer. And I don't know, 20 minutes later, this guy calls up and he goes, I'm kind of a new customer, but he says, I don't know if I got the wrong phone number or not, but the last time I called, it sounded like it was answered by an infant.
Hmm.
Well, Josie had picked up the phone. And in Renee's phone, no matter what line, 1 through 8, she picks up it. Automatically goes to whatever line. So right. If it was line 5, it'd go there. Nobody else's phone does that. So Josie gets on there and she starts talking on the phone just like she sees her mother and her grandmother do. So this guy calls up and he says, you know, I think somebody, an infant, answered the phone. And my daughter, Andy, she says, yes, sir, that's my daughter. She was, my mother lost sight of her for a minute. I said, you're blaming your mother for this. And she says, yeah. Well, anyway, the guy came in and it's been a big joke that Josie, at 2 years old, picked up the phone and tried to talk to the customer, only because that's all she sees,
yeah.
You know, with my wife and stuff. So it was just a good story, and it was something that we thought would be great. Hey, Brian, how are you today? What can we do for you?
Hi, Mark. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Love your show. I have a 2009 Ford Taurus. It's got a 3.5 V6. It's got 97,000 miles on it. It runs great, but when it's warmed up, I've got a bad detonation problem at lower RPMs. Like from idle up to 1500. No idea what's going on there. You have any ideas?
Have you changed gas to see if it would change anything?
Yeah, I went to full premium and at a couple different places and didn't help a bit.
Okay. So it has to either be a timing or maybe an EGR valve problem.
Okay.
And the timing is going to advance until the knock sensor screams stop. So I want to tell you, and don't you ever tell anybody this, okay?
Okay.
This is how we test a knock sensor. We plug in our scanner, and we put it in drive, and the motor's running, and we hit the alternator bracket with a hammer.
Okay.
And then it should say, knock.
Okay. Easy enough, huh?
So that's really how you check a knock sensor, is you just hit the engine with a hammer,
okay.
And if it doesn't go from okay to knock, or if it doesn't change, it says yes or no. Then it'll advance the timing, but your mileage doesn't give us any hint. But I would think that what I would do is I'd plug in my scanner, I would go drive the car, and Kevin would be next to me, and we would somehow create some kind, and we'd be watching the timing.
Okay.
And if we saw the timing climb, and then once we got some RPM and speed, then we saw the timing either be static or drop down, that would give us a hint on where to go.
Right.
It could be an ignition module that's bad.
Uh-huh.
It could be, it's not going to be a timing chain. It's too early for that.
Yeah, if it's the excuse me, typical pinging type sound, you say you did try higher octane fuel and it didn't make a difference at all?
Didn't help a bit, but it's just at like idle. Like I'm coming through the neighborhood and I'm just cruising and it's just idling up to about 1500, no more than that. It's pinging like crazy.
So it's a light throttle issue.
Very light throttle.
Okay. And here's what surprises me. If you had a timing problem, that would have changed. Super would have changed it. It would have changed it. Even a little bit, it would have changed it. Is there any possibility that you've got a broken bracket somewhere or something like that, and the noise you're hearing is related to something other than pre-ignition in your car?
No, because I just changed plugs on it last month, and I didn't see anything broken or anything amiss there, you know?
Okay. But what I'm saying is it's not a broken spark plug. It wouldn't be the first car that had a broken power steering bracket that people misinterpreted the noise on.
Right.
Okay. So,
yeah.
And the thing of it is from zero, from idle at 600 to 1500 RPM, that there's no load on that car.
Right.
There's just no load. So I would think that what you might want to do is get somebody there with you, pop the hood open, and you stay and drive and just bring it up and down from 600 to 15, from 15 to 6, from 600 to 15. And then if you take a long piece of 4-foot-long, 3/4-inch heater hose and you plug one into your ear and you start waving that hose around, you'll find out where that noise is coming from.
Okay.
So try that and see what happens, okay?
Will do. Thank you very much.
You betcha. Thompson's Auto Repair is in Mesa. He's the only store in Mesa that I put my name with. Brian and Thelma, are just exactly the kind of people you want as your neighbors. Now, if they weren't married, then Brian would be the kind of guy you'd want your daughter to bring home, and Thelma is the lady that you'd want your son to bring home. But they're married, so you can't do that. But Thompson's Auto Repair is a third-generation auto repair shop in Mesa. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley. They've been around a very long time. And Thelma and Brian are just the nicest people in the world. The other day, a guy had a problem with a bill on Brian, and Brian and I worked together with him. But Brian was so kind and so thorough, and together we were able to explain what the process was. But Brian was always willing to write a check. If we can't make him happy, I'll give him all his money back. The good thing is I think we made him happy and we were able to explain to him what went first, second, third, and fourth. So Brian and Thelma are good people. If you live in Mesa, there's nobody else from north to south to east to west, and they're centrally located anyway. So Apache Boulevard or Main, just east of Stapley, it's a good place to go. So anyway, my granddaughter is going to be answering the phone. Oh, I'll tell you one other thing. We had her own badge made.
Yeah.
And it says Josie Verdugo, and then at the bottom it says CEO in training.
Nice.
So when Andy, my daughter, went to work one day, she grabbed the wrong badge. So she's up at the front counter and she's doing she's check in, and a customer that knows my family pretty well says, Andy, I see that you're a CEO in training. And Andy goes, yeah. And he goes, I thought your name was Andy. I didn't know it was Josie. And Andy looks down, and her face blows right red. She has the wrong name tag on. And so she explains, this is my daughter's name tag. And he says, well, you know, how old is your daughter? She goes, 2. And the guy's going, why would you put a name tag on? But it's important to Josie.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's just important to Josie. So anyway, what's the number one problem that you think that we're faced today with car repair?
The number one problem.
I'll go first.
Okay, you go ahead.
All right. I think the number one problem is the proprietary information that is not necessarily falling down to the independent market. We have to pay a lot of money to go to the cloud.
Right.
And we have to pay for updates and upgrades. And then also I'm concerned about this. All of the different car makers, it's like OnStar. Now, OnStar can monitor your car, and so when your oil change lights come on, you can literally have somebody from India come on and say, hi, Mr. Salem, you're due for an oil change. Would you like me to make an appointment? Oh, and you're just close to this dealership.
Right.
And they can monitor every aspect of your car, but here's what they can't do, but they lie about it and say they can. They can't diagnose problems. So we don't have a fuel pressure sensor on virtually every car. So they go, well, you have an oxygen sensor code. But in reality, a plugged fuel filter is going to cause a lean condition, so the oxygen sensor is going to stick at 1.
Right.
And it's not going to go back and forth like it ought to. So they're going to say something about
2 minutes.
We think you have a bad oxygen sensor, so you're going to go in planning for that. Well, if they put an O2 sensor in it, it ain't going to fix your car. So they're not going to be able to diagnose your car long distance any more than you and I can do that.
True.
But I am concerned about, you know, us. But here's what they're doing for us for a favor. They're raising their prices dramatically because the cars are being built better and they don't have that income stream in the service department. So they're raising their prices dramatically, and they're also coming up with a whole bunch of BS about, well, this is Arizona, so ignore your owner's manual.
Yeah, I see that a lot.
Oh, man, do I ever. And, of course, that owner's manual is made for all 50 states.
Right.
It doesn't say go to Chapter 7 for Arizona and go to Chapter 12 for Minnesota. It doesn't say that. So, folks, there is no difference. Those manuals work for Arizona, Death Valley, and Minnesota. But the good news is they're getting greedy, in my opinion. And when they get greedy, they drive people to
One
us.
Minute.
And
Most definitely.
I think that's a good thing.
Oh, yeah. They help us out dramatically by getting cars in, even for factory recalls. And then the customer ends up leaving with this grocery list of recommendations. And some of the things are things that they are recommending only because that is their, you know, it's not the manufacturer recommendations.
Right.
It's their specific facility. So a lot of customers will come in with those grocery lists, and they're overwhelmed, for one. And they do. They really run people away because they overwhelm them with these long grocery lists of recommendations.
Getting greedy.
Yeah, exactly.
Going greedy. I think you're exactly right. They're their own worst enemies. But I teach people to say this, to independents and dealers as well.
What are you going to fix with flushing my fuel injectors? What are you going to fix by cleaning my I have a problem. What symptom do I have that you're going to fix? And this is what they're going to hear from the service writer. Because the service writer can't answer that.
True.
Kevin, thanks for staying with me. Mark at marksalem.com is my email address. If I didn't get your question, just send me an email. Mark at marksalem.com.